B3. Number 4B.
The moment I just want to bring out matter and mind are not two. Therefore we see here that evil or matter or error can serve as waymarks to God, to mind. It's like the ravens in the Bible who also stood for evil. They were also serving Elijah and feeding Elijah, showing that for Elijah there didn't exist anything evil. He just could see that whatever is called evil could be made really a blessing for good. All those wonderful statements and similes which we have in the Bible, like the vials full of the lost plagues, that they are nothing else but an angel entertained unawares, that they are showing us the way to the oneness of being and not to complete destruction. The Bible is full of showing that there is only one, and that what appears to be evil is but a help to good. And naturally this is very tricky. The moment you take these statements as if they were realities, then naturally these statements are no more true. That's what the first Christians were suffering under. There were various sects in Paul's time that would say, look here, it's wonderful, here we have a new theory, namely the theory of Christ, and the theory that Paul preached that you are now no more saved, you are now no more saved through the works of the law. What you can do now is that you have now faith, and through faith you are saved. And therefore, faith and the saving through faith is the grace and gift of God. You don't have any more to work for it. That's over. So the Christian said, oh, that's jolly good. I think that's a good religion. So we don't have to take care what we do. We can do what we want. As long as we believe in Christ, we are saved. And that we get without any working, that's a work of grace, that's an act of grace, it's a gift from God, that's the teaching of Paul, you see. And so he was suddenly facing a situation that these Christians behaved themselves really badly, you know. But they were not afraid, they were very happy doing all the worst things they could do, because they said, we are safe, you know, because we believe in Christ. And through, you said it too, you were preaching us that. We are saved through our belief in Christ, and that saving, that salvation is given as a gift, and we take that gift. See, brought to the modern terminology of today, Mrs. Eddy's language, here we have the same thing, that evil can serve as a waymark to good as long as it is seen as a belief, and not as something which we believe in and therefore prove, therefore act according. Then we make it a reality. If we take the belief in evil and then practice that evil, then it's no more a belief. Then it's actuality. We make it part of our existence, part of our mortal life, and then it is no more a way marked to truth. But as a belief, it is. And we will come back to that point of reversal, because we will see again that these statements, I was very careful to try to read the whole statement and not just the nice part of it, which would say that by reversal, error serves as waymark to truth, because all these statements begin with science, when science is understood. And that's the point. As Christian Science students take everything at the point of evil, a situation of evil, and say, this is good. This is good. Without first going back and see that science must reverse it, not we must reverse it. That science must reverse it. And in order to have science, you have to understand science. Science is not just a term. So we'll see that there is built in the theory of oneness, the way how to get out from duality into oneness by reversing, really, the opposite belief into an understanding of the facts. We take point 10, which is just one step further. I termed it like this: transitionary symptoms from handling evil. I don't know if that term "from" is right, but the transitionary symptoms which we get when we are handling evil, that's what I want to bring out. You don't have that in the notes. Because it's taped. The argument is this, that says, all right, if I understand truth, and if I understand the nothingness of evil, then it should be natural that the more I understand truth, the less I should experience evil. This seems to be logical, but it isn't. It isn't in Mrs. Eddy's theory. In Mrs. Eddy's theory, this can be so, but must not be so. Or the English perhaps you would use is, but it need not be so. It need not be so. Because she sees that handling evil from the point of view of truth is only brings us only far away from error and brings us complete harmony when we have seen 100% through that truth. Then there is no chemicalization. But very few can do that. And in our life we know that our whole life is a working out of this problem of duality. No one of us has translated everything from the human into the divine, or we wouldn't be here. We would have some nice wings and a harp and would singing psalms and so on, you see. But we are still here. We are still in the transitionary period of working out this point. And therefore Mrs. Eddy wants to show the way marks. And the way marks are that in the measure as truth urges upon error, it's truth. Error can resist it. Error is within us. We may resist it. And in the measure as we resist it and don't accept the full impact of truth, we may feel that we get into a crisis, into a chemicalization. And things seem to be worse than before. But only transitionary. And to bring out this is actually one of Mrs. Eddy's great contribution to the whole solution, because so often a student will start out rightly and starts out to work out the problem rightly. And if he doesn't get at once a better result, you know, like that, and things get worse, then his conclusion is, I didn't give a right treatment. He doesn't say, golly, this must be a real good treatment, that it can stir up evil to that extent, you see, to that extent that it screams and shouts because it knows that the end is nigh. We must see that. These are the transitionary periods, the periods of crisis, which we may go through. The higher the idea is which we follow, the higher the purpose of the positive problem is that we are working out, the more we encounter naturally opposition, encounter the very opposite fact, because we have seen truth makes both more of error and less of error. So if it makes more of error, we shouldn't be afraid. We shouldn't be sidetracked in our trust in the idea. But go right on and be encouraged very much to go on and not to give in. So often when the resistance comes, students give in and say, I don't have enough understanding, I can't work it out, Christian Science doesn't work for me, you know. So often you see, Christian Science has never worked for me, it has never helped me, because they were never able to go through the Red Sea. The moment they come to the Red Sea, they say, well, here is the Red Sea, I can't go through it. So let's go back. Something is wrong on this way. And you see what it meant for Mrs. Eric to discover this law, this terrific law that when truth urges upon error, it resists the claim that things can go worse, humanly. And then we have to pull up our socks and say, on we go, huh? On we go. We stick to the truth. We stick to the line we have taken. And so Mrs. Eddy showed with Jesus' life, you see, this very fact that the higher the idea is, the more the opposition is. Why should a man like Jesus, who only gave the best of everything, who bestowed only health and happiness and godlikeness to the people, why should he be hated? Why should he be persecuted? Why should all the error be let loose? And the theory is, yes, that's okay. That's how it must be. That's just how it must be. The human mind doesn't like it. You know, the human mind doesn't like it. People are looking out for a metaphysical system or for a metaphysical line where everything is just fine, you know, just fine, you know. Everything is like a garden of roses, and you can walk through it and sing a little bit and so on. No pebbles on the road. It's all soft and cozy and nice. Think of such a heaven. Think if you would have to stay more than a day in a heaven where there is only harps and singing going on. Oh, golly, would that be annoying, huh? We would get fed up of it after a short while. And we would say, let's do something that needs something more than this. So here she was telling us, you see, that wonderful law, that truth is resisted. That there seems to be another power that resists the power of truth. And that power seems to be very real in that transitionary stage. But the theory of that practice is that it is only as long as we don't see right through it, the absolute purity of it. That's why Mrs. Eddy would handle crisis, chemicalization, and these things with spirit, because spirit is the only. Spirit has no opposites. Therefore, whenever a crisis comes, just go back to that purity of spirit and see that there can be no opposite power, no opposite action, no opposite mind, no opposite faculties. And in this way you fill your thought with the purity of spirit, the onlyness of spirit, the reflection of spirit, the focal point of spirit in which all the ideas gather, and there is nothing, no darkness anymore there, and you relieve that chemicalized situation and begin to see the oneness and onlyness of being. So here we have, like in the Apocalypse, the higher really John the Revelator was seeing, and the higher he went spiritually, the more he was opposed by all sorts, by great tribulation, by calamities, by the red dragon, by the serpent, the household set at variance, and inflamed hate and jealousy. All that came up. but only to disappear afterwards. And it is just a question, can we persevere? That's the practice of it. Stick to the truth and not be sidetracked. That's Paul's great teaching. If you know the matrix of the epistles, then you know that the whole index for the horizontal is all about that, that you well may accept the new faith, but that doesn't do the trick, that you have to claim that new faith, and that doesn't do the whole trick. You come to Christianity where he says, and then you have to persevere in the midst of everything. So and so many times have I been stoned, so many times have I been slain, so many times have I made shipwreck, so many times I have been in chains. And he counts all those things, bad things that happened to him, and said, but I was faithful. And every time I came out, and every time I came out at the other end, I was a big step further than before. If you take Paul's epistles, there is nothing in it which looks like a rosy pathway, nothing at all. But Christian scientists would like to have it that way. The theory is that way, that says, yes, you can have perfect harmony, and it's your birthright. You can have it. But you must have the right practice. You must practice that what the theory tells you. And so, let's see that we are not sidetracked by these phenomena, but are really sticking to the oneness of being, and never waver and suddenly feel there are still some two powers at work. Then, when that transitionary period is overcome, or when we are faithful to it, then we see a next point, which Mrs. Eddy brings out, point 11, I think we have, that evil destroys itself. Can you see how through this way the oneness and onlyness of truth is brought out? Truth establishing itself, evil destroying itself. When it is destroyed, it's no more there, and the established truth is the only thing there. Error urged to its final limits. See, to the final. What we had before was the transitional stages. But if we are like Paul, faithful to the idea, then we push error to its final limits. And error pushed to its final limits is self-destroyed. Jesus gave a wonderful example of that with Judas. You know, he knew Judas inside, outside. You know, he knew what he was. But he invited him to come to the Last Supper. He was there. And when Judas nearly couldn't stand it anymore, you know, when his materiality was rebelling against that spirituality to the highest point, and walked out, Jesus said to him, yes, and you know, what you want to do and what you are going to do, do it quickly. He didn't say, well, look here, dear Judas, don't do it. You know, it will not lead you anywhere. Come back, don't do it. He said, no, you go and do it. John Dory used to say, if you give enough rope, the Judas always hangs himself. You just have to give enough rope. And that's our attitude towards working out error, that we are not going to do something humanly possible for error to destroy itself, but we give enough rope that it can hang itself. It will always hang itself. It may hang itself next day, it may hang itself in a year, or it may hang itself in 10 years. We just have to wait. But then we know that it is truth's way of letting error destroy itself. And we do not interfere humanly and then mess up the whole mess even more. And this is terrific art, to be able to shut up, not say anything, just let it happen. Just to let it happen. Not blindly. Now we come back to handle evil. not by shutting one's eye to it, but by being well aware of what's going on, what's happening. She says, the sinful misconception of life falls back on itself. We don't have to do anything. What is not right with us will always be destroyed. What will be not right with somebody else will also be destroyed. But we are in the same boat. Everyone is in the same boat. And everyone has those aspects of error, the aspects that are not divine, every one of us. And therefore, we can see how important it is to handle latent evil. Because mostly, for 9 out of 10 cases, we are not aware, really, of that erroneous consciousness which we entertain. We are not aware of it, and therefore we think we cannot be made responsible for it. Yes, we can. Because ignorance of the law does not free us from punishment. You have that in state law, you see, in the ordinary legal law, that ignorance of the law does not exclude you from punishment, does not free from punishment. And that's true in the divine law. All that is within us, and we know there is a lot in each one of us, and we are not aware of it because it's subconscious. It's a latent belief. We are not self-conscious of it. But if we handle evil systematically, from the point of view of the synonymous term, and handle all the claims of evil that, say, stand up against evil, we jolly well handle also our false attitude. And then suddenly we can handle it and we can be free from it. So it destroys itself. We come to the next point, 12, which I would call the suppositional origin of evil. Here we come to the suppositional origin of evil. Yes. Here we come to a very tricky question. Every Christian scientist who is thinking has been asking that question over years and years and years, you know. Where does evil come from if it doesn't exist? That age-long question. And especially it's an age-long question in Christian science, because Christian science makes more of error than religion. Religion can answer that very easily. It says it comes from God. God punishes you. So the origin is in God. That settles the question. They have it very easy. They just pin it down to God, who is cross with you because you are not behaving yourself and because you are a sinner. Anyway, so here and there you get it. So that's the origin of evil. So they are not questioning evil. They say, that's right, that should happen, that's God's command, so that's okay. But in Christian science, we make more of evil. Because we see that error cannot come from truth, and that God is truth, so error cannot come from truth. So where does it come from? So we can say to all phenomena of evil, as we had it before, we can reduce it to just to one thing, mortal mind. That's where all evil comes from. And if you have said it comes from mortal mind, then you say, where does mortal mind come from? You see? So we have to find another origin for this origin. Where does mortal mind come from? And then, somehow, everybody is more or less at sea. We can give them many answers. I have given in my life many answers. Or I would say, all through my Christian science education, I have asked that question again and over again and tried to find an answer. And I've given myself an answer that this question is anyway a wrong question, therefore cannot be answered. Because we cannot ask for an origin of mortal mind if mortal mind has no origin. So asking about the origin of mortal mind is anyway a wrong question, so we shouldn't ask it. So when I say it's a wrong question, I can again make that as a thesis for an antithesis and can say, why do I ask a wrong question? I don't get very further. So this is a quite an interesting point, and we'll discuss that tonight. Okay.